I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Until recently, with the story of Bruce Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner, it's a subject that has not been much discussed. Transitions to female particularly, and in the past couple months, because of Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner, we've talked about it quite a bit. Various news outlets have also profiled children who identify as opposite gender, and we have learned and seen so many pictures of Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn, maybe not many pictures, but we're starting to see more and more of them. So this hour, I thought we would talk about transitioning and what it's like to have a partner transition to female, and it's a subject that we're just learning more about, and it's worthwhile for us to learn more about it. So we have two guests with us this hour of the program. Helen Boyd is our guest. Helen is the author of two books about the experience of being married to a transgender person. She has been interviewed in Salon and also for Dan Savage's Savage Love podcast. She speaks at universities all the time, currently teaches gender studies at Lawrence University, and has been blogging about gender and trans issues at myhusbandbetty.com for more than a decade, as well as creating resources for trans people and their partners. She's been living with her wife in the Fox Valley for 6 years. She is currently writing her third book. But when she looks at her wedding photos, she says she legally married a heterosexual in 2001. And when she goes back to the photos, it's like there's still that guy out there somewhere who I just don't know anymore and certainly miss that person. We'll talk about that. Betty Crowell is a photographer, a designer, and a filmmaker who works in new media and communications at Lawrence University. And Helen and Betty have been married for 14 years. She wanted us to add that they are happy to talk about the fact that they use stage names in order to provide themselves some privacy and safety, because as you can well imagine, this has not been an easy road, and being in public together is not always an easy thing. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And Twitter is @KDunnShow. Helen, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad I could be here.
Yeah, and thank you, Betty, so much for being with us.
You are very welcome.
Yeah, it should be a really interesting hour. Let's start with you, Helen. I read an interview in which you said, and I thought that this was fairly profound, when you look to your wedding photos, you say it's like there's still that guy out there somewhere. You just don't know anymore. You miss that person. You have a hard time not seeing your wife, even in those wedding photos where she looks very much like a guy and is in a tux. Do you feel like that person you married is gone forever? Is it a whole new person you're dealing with, or is it still essentially the same heart and soul?
It's essentially the same heart and soul. Our history is certainly the same, and she remembers all of the time that we had together. So we still have all of the kind of romantic memory of our early meeting. It's just sometimes hard to, on a day-to-day basis, I guess, more so, realize that that's the guy that I married, because I'm so used now to the fact that she's been living as a woman for a very long time, and yeah, it's on a day-to-day level, I don't particularly notice. And then every once in a while, it's like, oh, right, that happened.
Right, that happened. It's a fairly big thing to have happened. Oh, yeah, of course, that happened.
Just that thing.
Yeah, Betty, what about you? Do you remember, does that person that you were feel like he is gone forever or resides in you in some place?
No, by all means, I am the sum of all of my experiences. And the reality of my experience is that, you know, for the first 30-odd years of my life, I was a guy. And so that is all there and present. And in some ways, was one of the most interesting obstacles I had to overcome was being able to be a whole person. You know, there's this temptation to sort of recreate yourself out of cold cloth because, well, you're recreating yourself in so many ways. I'm very much who that person was. I mean, I'm different because I'm older.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been through, you know, some pretty interesting experiences. But I really try to think of myself as, you know, human being first, lady second, trans woman third, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I understand, I don't know if you still act, but you were an actor, and I think you've talked about this, Helen, that you had some really terrific male leads. Did you have to lose all of those?
I did. Well, I was really lucky. It was New York City. I worked all the time. I was a very fortunate actor off-Broadway. And I had an experience, an epiphany, one night on the subway home. I was alternating on nights between playing Henry V and on other nights playing Algernon from The Importance of Being Earnest. And I remember being on the train sort of being struck by the sort of spectrum of guy that I was trying to access every week. And it kind of dawned on me at some point that acting had been sort of a way for me to audition kinds of guys in the hope that I could find a kind of guy that I felt comfortable with. And it was that moment on the train late at night that I just went, I don't particularly feel comfortable as any of these men.
And
so when I transitioned, I did purposely sort of stop acting. And it's only now that I actually give thought to doing it again. I just thought that was going to be one of the prices of transition, was that my acting career would have to go away.
Well, maybe not.
Well, that's what I mean. Laverne Cox is burning it up all over the place.
Right, exactly. Here you go. You've got something else you can do again as female this time. Helen, did you know what you were getting into? I understand that you knew that Betty was a cross-dresser fairly early in your relationship.
Yeah, she actually hates that term, but I feel like it's one that kind of communicates something. I knew that there was some cross-gender stuff going on, and I've always been a little bit gendery. So it was on one of our first dates very early on that she told me she'd had some awesome time at one Halloween with a girlfriend who dressed up as she got dressed up as Marie Antoinette, and her girlfriend had gone as King Louis, and that was all very exciting. And basically, it was like the greatest understatement in the history of the world. So it's like I had some idea, but it took a while before I was like, oh, that wasn't like just a Halloween thing. That was like a every Tuesday thing. So, but I certainly encouraged it, and I knew it. I mean, I felt very thankful because I had always been a tomboy, and so it was kind of nice to have company and not have to feel like I had to play some weird feminine version of woman to date guys, which I often felt like I did before I met her. So being able to be a little bit more myself, have my own gender, frankly, be validated in our relationship was actually amazing. But I certainly didn't expect the rest of it. Like, I didn't expect transition, and then certainly, you know, I like to joke that I went from being the awesome, happy partner of somebody who occasionally, you know, presented cross-gender and went from to being a wife, you know, which is a very different experience entirely.
Yes, I'm sure. And there are not as many, you have said, who will walk away from that, that more people are staying with their partners as they transition. But it was something that, and I guess quite naturally so, crossed your mind, this might be too much for me.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of change, and I think what the difficult parts of staying through transition are not the ones you're expecting, you know, like with all major life events. The things that you worry about or you're anxious about or this might be a problem or that might be a problem, that stuff ends up not being a problem, and the stuff that you hadn't really even thought of or that hadn't even occurred to you ends up being the problem.
Ooh, so, like what?
Well, I was thinking people are always, I guess we're always concerned that people would be upset that others would assume I was a lesbian. And for me, it was like, well, people had always assumed I was a lesbian. So I wasn't, but, you know, the assumption was something I was already used to. So that ended up being not a big deal, and that was one of the things that I found other partners were more concerned or anxious about. But then at the same time, like the dumb things, like, you know, being given separate checks everywhere you go to eat, you know, almost automatically. People don't necessarily see a romantic relationship when they see two women going out to dinner together. And so, you know, feeling disappeared or feeling having our relationship itself disappeared in certain ways by other people, that got under my skin in a way that I never expected.
Is this something, Betty, that you were aware of really early? I saw this NBC TV show. It's interesting, all of a sudden, because of Bruce Jenner, we're seeing all these TV shows with a number of very young children who had very accepting parents, and they felt as though they were boys when they were girls and girls when they were boys, and dressed accordingly, and were told, teachers were told, this is my son. And right. It's something that we just haven't talked about very much. If you go way back in your life, did you identify opposite gender when you were very young?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I remember my first experience of gender was a kindergarten, the first day of kindergarten. I remember they drew up two lines. All the boys go over here and all the girls go over here. And I went and got in line with the girls. And then they were like, oh, no, you have to be in the other line. And that was the first moment that I had where I went, oh, really? Oh, can I don't know if I should tell my parents. I'm not sure I should tell my parents. It was the 70s. I love the idea that nowadays that 5-year-old or that 6-year-old, that there's enough of a language out there that they can kind of go, hey, mom, hey, dad, you know, I'm a girl, or whatever that is. That's really heartening to me. That sort of seems to allay a lot of, I think, heartbreak and tragedy and hardness that come from transitioning later.
Mm-hmm.
You just grow up that then, you know? You don't think about being trans, you just grow up.
Did you feel as though you could tell that to your parents or to somebody close to you?
No, not even remotely. No, I always joke that the thing that saved me was punk rock and new wave, because people started to look different, and I was just old enough that I could slip in and, you know, play with makeup and be different that way. That was the closest expression I had, that and Halloween.
In Halloween.
Halloween, huh. Yes. I was infamous for Halloween.
Huh. And so what about when you met Helen? Did she know, when you get married to somebody, you want to know a lot about them. Were you able to tell her about who you were?
You know, I think a lot about that date where I told her that, because I think at that point in time it was as much as I was willing to tell myself.
I see.
And frankly, because of Helen, she's more responsible for chipping away at that iceberg than I am. I don't know that I wouldn't have waited another 20 years to chip away at it.
Oh, that's interesting. What did you do, Helen?
Sorry, doll. It's all right.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, I get that all the time.
I love that.
It was more the case that I recognized that she was unhappy in certain deep ways. And then she'd say little things but wouldn't necessarily put it together, like even the issues with the acting. Like one day when she just kind of said, I think I've been trying to find the right guy to play, and I was like, well, you've played everybody now, you know, so who's left, effectively, except someone who's not of the male gender. And it was really, I mean, I think the thing that strikes me is people talk about people who transition late and they say, well, how did they wait so long? And it's really, I think, for a generation, having so many trans friends, it's an impossible dream. It doesn't even seem like something you could actually do. Even if you know people, even if you've met people who've transitioned, even if you read it in the headlines, I still worry even about the younger people, because it just seems too difficult to do.
Yes.
That's exactly right. That is exactly how I thought. It just did not seem like it was a possibility for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were given advice early, too, like try to do as little as you can, because transition's rough. You know, it's not an easy thing. So if you can somehow scratch the gender identity itch by, you know, doing a cross-gender or kind of middle path, you know, where you get to occupy both genders in certain ways, then maybe try that. You know, it was trying to be pragmatic. Most people don't rush out and go, yay, I get to transition now. That's just really not uncommon.
Yeah. So how long was the transition, Betty?
It's really actually kind of hard to put a date on it, because it happened really slow and over time. I would say probably by about 2005, 2006, it had really kicked in, and I was spending more of my time in the world as female than I was as male. And that was that was very intentional because I really wanted to find out if I could do it, if my quality of life was going to be okay. I didn't want to be stared at on the subway. Excuse me. I wanted a quality of life. And so because of fluke of genetics, you know, I'm skinny, I'm not tall, I have all of my hair. I was an actor for a long time, so I was really good with my voice. I was able to socially transition long before I changed my name or any of the medical sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there really is no date.
Right.
The only date that I sort of really remember is the summer of 2009, because that's when I finally got around to changing my ID and documentation.
Mm. Yeah, you have to do all of that. And you, Helen, maybe you were just because Betty was going through all of this, but you have noticed that all of a sudden you remember this, and you are quoted as saying it's a difficult thing to be not in this sort of androgynous state, because you say he was getting sir, ma'am, finally decided on doing the legal stuff, you write, because she was trying to take a flight and somebody in the TSA almost didn't let her get on the plane because she didn't look enough like her male ID. So at some point you have to move to one way or the other, right?
Exactly. We had a community that was, you know, knew her as Betty and had made the change with us, the pronoun changes and the name changes. But, you know, it's as somebody who's in their 30s, how often do you actually take out your ID? So the fact that it didn't match didn't really come up a whole lot. I mean, I remember at some point, like, getting carded for alcohol, which is always entertaining when you're 35. But, you know, and then I could bring out my ID. So she didn't really have to worry about it for years. And it was only until the TSA thing where she was traveling alone that all of a sudden this became a thing and we had to worry about it. But she was also kind of a very reluctant transitioner in so many ways. So
reluctant because of Helen? Would you say, Betty, that it was, did you sense it might be not very easy for her, so you were following how long it would take her to become used to this?
That was very important to me. I've always tried to see my transness, for lack of a better term, in context of me as a person. And me as a person absolutely knew that I wanted to be old with Helen, right? I wanted to be married to her, because it was like the greatest thing that had ever happened to me. And so I was very deliberate in how I went about it. I made sure, I mean, it was to the point where she would be the one, you know, very late at night after going out drinking or something, that she would go, you know, doll, you really should just go on hormones or whatever it would be. Because I felt like, you know, if she was on the same page as me, we stood a chance. And that was really important.
So how often were you on the same page, Helen, or was that a gradual process for you to be on the same page?
It was always gradual. Like I said, it was seeing I knew that she, our deal together was that she would go as slow as she could and I would go as fast as I could.
Oh.
So that we could figure out a way to try to keep up with each other a little bit. And it doesn't mean that she didn't occasionally race forward and I didn't occasionally dig in my heels, because all of that happened. Over different aspects of the transition, certainly disagreements about who to come out to when, all of that kind of stuff, and that's always an ongoing issue, really. But I was aware that she was trying to pay attention, and precisely so that our relationship would make it out the other side. And, you know, when you have somebody who is making that kind of commitment to your relationship, who's actually adjusting their own, you know, like any good relationship, right, adjusting their own needs and desires for you, then, you know, you pay attention.
Mm-hmm. And yet, Betty's needs and desires probably had to take front and center because of the enormity of what Betty was doing here, right? And you make a point of saying, once Betty emerged, that people made a point to your liberal friends, your friends who wanted to embrace Betty, would say how wonderful you look and how beautiful you look. And Helen, you're saying, wait a second, what about me? Right?
Oh, it's true. We become invisible. I mean, trans people, I think,
are fascinating to a certain degree to people, and that's, you know, for good reasons and bad reasons. There's a lot of exoticizing and all of that, but there's also just kind people who are, you know, sometimes amazed because they didn't realize someone was trans, or which happens for her quite a lot. But then otherwise, it's that sense of, you know, people want to be, well, you look really good. And sometimes, frankly, when people compliment her, I always, you know, I always kind of twitch a little bit, because it's like, you, they're kind of saying, well, you look like a great woman for someone who kind of wasn't one. You know, it's, it always seems like a very caveated compliment. But at the same time, it, you do become invisible as the other person. And I'm certainly not somebody who has really cared very much about pretty, but when all of a sudden you're standing next to someone who someone is, everyone's always complimenting, then you start to notice.
Right. Well, Betty, what about the kind people do you run into when people find out you are you transition to being a woman? Are people kind about that, or is that still very hard, and do you get a lot of negative response?
I am an extraordinarily privileged person. I have had no problems.
No problems? Are you serious?
I have had no problems. My sense is that most people look at me and they don't know. And so I just don't say anything.
Right.
And I just keep going. If people ask me, I absolutely tell the truth because, well, you know, that's the truth. But I know how atypical I am in that sense, and how blessed I am, for lack of a better word. I don't have anything bad to say, and that sounds crazy, but I don't.
Well, Helen, having worked in this field, is that atypical?
Incredibly atypical. That's also, she's a very optimistic person. I wouldn't say that there's been no problems, but there have been none that have been insurmountable or too difficult to handle, or
none that have risen to the level that my memory decided to remember it. How's that?
Right, exactly. So there have been things that have been difficult, but they haven't been overwhelming or in ways that either of us frankly chooses to remember.
Well, we're going to open this to our audience. And feel free to join the conversation. We wanted to, you know, instead of just the pictures of, oh, doesn't Caitlyn Jenner look gorgeous? And we'll bring that issue up, too. I don't know if you saw the New York Times piece yesterday. It was a lengthy piece about gender and women and issues that women have had to fight for. And the question, which I thought was interesting, that somebody has raised, why did Bruce Jenner have to come out as such a babe? Does that not reinforce all these stereotypes about women that women have been trying to overcome for generations now and making a little bit of success? But it's an interesting story. And I do think it's one that people have not discussed very much, and so we thought we would do this. We're talking about the experience of being married to a transgendered person and the process of transitioning with Betty Crowell, who is the wife of Helen Boyd. Helen is the author of two books about the experience of being married to a transgendered person. She's been interviewed in publications. She speaks at universities. She is currently writing her third book, and she teaches gender studies at Lawrence University. Her wife, Betty Crowell, a photographer, designer, filmmaker who works in new media and communications at Lawrence University. They have been married for 14 years. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls now. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. And we start with Gianna from Appleton. Hi, Gianna.
Hi.
Hi.
I just was wondering if you have any good advice for me. I've been doing a lot of research myself. I have a son who's 7 years old who is gender creative, gender nonconformist, and we allow him to do, you know, whatever he feels at our house. He's gone to school with dresses on. We've had really good luck so far. with the community side of things. However, the family side of things has gotten a little difficult. But any and all advice you could give me, I am willing to hear. Please.
Helen.
A couple of things. Family, the closer people are to the trans person, in some ways, the harder it is for them. I always try to remind people that my status changed when my wife's gender changed. And so people who are close to the child, especially the way that people express concern and protectiveness over children, and this is still so new, so especially for family, as long as people are reasonably respectful and you can be protective, they sometimes take a while to come along. Betty would say that there's a sort of ability to sort of love family even when they're not quite on board. It can be a kind of tricky thing to balance. And it's a common experience, too, right, for a lot of trans people to feel estranged from family as a result of transition or any kind of gender expression. But otherwise, you being awesome parents, right, is huge. For trans youth, that is a gigantic step in the right direction. And being able to sort of advocate on behalf of your child with doctors and schools, et cetera, that makes all the difference.
And how do you go about that now? How do you negotiate or talk to teachers, administrators? Do you feel it necessary to do that? And what do you say, Gianna?
Well, we've just had meetings as necessary as things have come up that we've needed to deal with. And they've all been... So far, we've had really good luck, really supportive. Teachers have taken the time to, you know, prep the other students by reading books about gender equality beforehand, before major things have happened, and so far, so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I can't imagine it's always going to be that easy going, is it, Helen?
It can be. Sometimes
really?
It works, yes. If people are paying attention, it's really not the younger people have less of a time with this than older people. That probably isn't a surprise. But younger kids seem to be able to adjust. If they're learning that they should be suspicious of someone whose gender is non-traditional, they're learning that somewhere most of the time on their own. As long as the person's, you know, cool to hang out with and fun to play with, they don't seem to care.
Mm-hmm. Betty, you were there. What do you say about this?
It actually doesn't surprise me that much. Appleton as a town has surprised me over and over and over again. You know, I'm from New York City, so I have these expectations. And it does not surprise me to hear that people in Appleton are trying to do their darndest to look out for this kid, and I think that actually speaks well of this place.
Yes, it does. Helen, you said your status had changed. You've talked a little bit about that. Tell me more about that. How has your status changed?
Well, I used to be a heterosexual woman. I think the clearest indicator for me is that when we first got engaged and when we first got married and we looked like a heterosexual couple, we would always get the question, so you're going to have kids, you know, in the excited, happy way.
Mm-hmm.
And then once her gender issues were known, it was sort of, well, you guys aren't going to have kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference, right? It's the sense of, you know, feeling encouraged on the one hand because you're normal, and then, oh, that kid's life is going to be really hard if you guys decide to have kids, you know? And that's frustrating because we're, of course, the exact same people with the exact same resources, with the exact, you know, nothing else had really changed except gender and how much we might or might not have legal acceptance in terms of our relationship.
Right. So have you considered children?
No, neither of us wanted them. So,
I've always subscribed to the idea that people who want children should have them, and people who don't shouldn't.
Right. I think that makes perfect sense. Gianna, thank you very much for your call, and let's go to is it Kayla in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Hi. Thank you guys for having me. So, reading about the whole Caitlyn Jenner thing, I find that it's often not discussed about, I guess, trans women who don't always have the chance to get the surgery or who can't afford to take hormones. What advice, I guess, would you have for those women?
That's really hard because most of the time medical stuff is not actually accessible. I mean, that's one of the things that's really rough about Caitlyn Jenner and about other sort of famous transitions that have happened is that people have access to resources that most of the trans community don't get anywhere near.
and it becomes really the reality was many people get to transition because they can afford to, because health insurance has not covered these things for years and years and years. Some places are starting to, but it's still often very limited and restricted. What I would recommend, generally speaking, is that, I mean, especially in terms of surgery, people have been very creative about finding ways to fund their health expenses. I've known friends who've made documentary films and have done Kickstarters and things like that, but that often requires having a larger group of people, and there's so many trans people in need that often there isn't enough funding. It's one of the reasons why I feel like I always try to emphasize the fact that this assumption that a woman is only a woman once she has surgery is so not the case, because most trans women, frankly, just can't afford to do it. And some don't want it, frankly, for that matter. So there's a whole other kettle of fish. So for right now, you know, there are certainly groups that are trying to get more of this to happen in terms of the health stuff. There's a great health conference out of Philadelphia, I think, that just happened. So if you want to get involved, there's certainly ways to get involved to sort of learn how to get maybe your private business's insurance company to stop excluding trans needs. But it's often an uphill battle. Mm.
If you don't mind my asking, Betty, did you go through surgery?
You know, I'm gonna follow Laverne Cox's lead on this one and not talk about it, in the sense that I understand why I get asked that question all the time, but I kind of sort of feel like unless I get to sort of turn the tables on everybody else and ask them about their stuff, I just, you know, as Alan said, it's very expensive. The whole medical stuff is very expensive, and, you know, for a long time we used to joke we had better things to do with $25,000.
Right.
I feel like I just don't answer that question anymore. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
It's just sort of, I understand why people ask about it, but I think in some ways the medical aspects of transition are the least fascinating and the least, other than getting access to care, which is incredibly hard. There's no denying that. The medical stuff is a very mostly private affair between you, your body, your partner, and your doctor. It's the social transition. It's being able to get on with your day, to be able to find employment, to be treated like any other, you know, person walking down the street. That to me is the really big thing. And that's sometimes the hardest thing to do, is to find a way to, you know, be successful, especially if you're older and you don't have access to all of these things. It can be very hard.
Yeah, I only asked because I wondered if it was necessary if you can make the transition and not have the surgery and still feel as though you've made a successful transition. And it sounds to me that you can.
Yeah, I believe so. I have long thought that the focus of my particular gender dysphoria, to use that phrase, has always been far more on the social side. I was like, why can't I be in the girls' line? I'm one of the girls. Why can't I just go do that? Or why can't I do this? Rather than, I don't look right. I mean, I knew I didn't look right, but I didn't obsess over that. It was more like, why can't I be one of the girls? And mm-hmm. then why can't I be one of the ladies?
Yeah, the etiquette, whenever I teach etiquette on these issues in terms of people dealing with trans people, especially when it's new, one of the guides I give people is that if you have the kind of relationship where you're going to be talking really intimately and vulnerably about your own genitals, then perhaps it's the kind of friendship where it's okay to ask that, but mm-hmm. most of the time, it's not. So, I mean, that's generally for your audience, a good rule of thumb, that asking somebody, unless you want the table turned effectively,
Right,
you have to be pretty close friends with someone for it to be. Yeah.
I'm sure both of you saw, I thought it was a very interesting piece, What Makes a Woman, in yesterday's New York Times. And it's a long article that covers a lot of issues, but because Caitlyn Jenner has made the front page of Vanity Fair and people are talking about this and the news is covering this issue, there was an interesting response to the Vanity Fair that I wanted both of you to respond to. The article essentially was critical of Caitlyn Jenner coming out as a sex babe is the way that this critic called her, that she was just, you know, the low cleavage and had to be gorgeously attractive in this image of female that a lot of people who are feminists feel set women back, that this is the image of women that we're getting with the huge display of this story. And that's not the image of woman that should be extolled in 2016. Helen?
It's, you know, what's funny about that is that, like, can we think about the women that Caitlyn Jenner hangs out with for a second, right? I mean, who is her peer group? As women, we're talking about the Kardashians, right? The most uber. And so unless a feminist critic is really going to take the Kardashians on, and she probably does, I would argue, you know, that these representations, these uber feminine for the male gaze versions of femininity are not to be extolled anymore. But there's millions of them out there. There's millions of women who are not trans who are out there looking that way. And yay for them. I mean, I think we're kind of past that point. The other thing is that there's a million trans women who go on to identify as butch lesbians and who are androgynous in their presentation and who are incredibly committed feminists. That Caitlyn Jenner isn't is more a result of her celebrity and maybe that she's a Republican. What are her concerns in terms of actually representing, you know, that ideal of feminism, which I think is a little old school at this point? Probably none. It's not her gig. But there are plenty of women who, so many feminists would love to know the awesome activist, incredibly radical feminist work that so many trans women are doing. They're remarkable. I mean, I've been doing this work for 12 years, and believe me, I had to be talked into all of these things because there are a lot of trans women who early in their transition get very into the, I can finally wear heels and I can finally wear nail polish. I think that was one of the things Jenner talked about. Well, you know, if you've never been allowed to, that's awesome and it's liberating. Will they get tired of it?
I'm sorry, Betty.
I definitely went through a phase where I would, you know, I would try to just be as high femme as possible because I could.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, that faded pretty quick, thanks in part to Helen kind of going, you're not going out looking like that. And two, I really like flip-flops and sweatpants.
So right.
it kind of died out. You know, when you're hiking across, you know, campus carrying a bunch of camera gear, you don't want to do it in 3-inch heels.
Those 3-inch heels. I rail against those. I never wore them and I never will, and I don't get it. It shouldn't be high femme.
The other thing I wanted to say about that article is I think she makes a kind of a really basic mistake in that she sort of conflates Caitlyn Jenner with all transgender women. And even in the middle of her article, she picks up on a couple of Twitter activists and then says, you know, that represents the whole. And that was, to me, what I found so disheartening about the article was this sort of like, well, if Caitlyn Jenner's like that, so all trans women are like this. And some of them are really angry because they said this thing and that's horrific. And I get it. If you don't like high femme stuff, then that's fine. But if I had the chance to be photographed by Annie Leibovitz, and I would be like, whatever you want to do. You're an artist. You're like, I would do whatever you want to do.
Give her a call. See what exactly. She does, right? Give her a call. Thanks, Kayla, very much for your call. Judy in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Judy.
Oh, hi. I hope you can hear me. I am going to drive. I'm not holding. I'm not doing anything dangerous. But,
all right, Judy.
You know, I cannot tell you what a great subject this is. This is just wonderful. We got a dog in the car, too. And first of all, thank you all for coming forward. I have two daughters, and they are 6'1 and 6'2, and they cannot find shoes. And I happen to have a patient at our office who sells shoes and said the demand is so high. Size 12, 13, and 14 in women's shoes, thanks to you guys. So now we can buy some shoes for my daughters. So the other thing I wanted to mention was I was extremely, extremely open-eyed and open-hearted when I saw the ESPN special on Renee Richards. And it was I believe it was in 2011. Never saw it then. Don't have cable, but happened to run into it, and I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? The timing now with Caitlyn Jenner. But it was so warm, so real, so heartwarming of what that pioneer went through to get where she wanted to be. Turning from a man into a woman, continuing the gifts that she had as a eye surgeon and a tennis player, and having all of society jump all over her. Her life kind of went upside down. It was very sad. She was very realistic about it, trying to do things as she can. But the statement she made, I just thought was really, really profound, because she, as a man, was hot. I guess that's the word. There were lots of girlfriends, lots of women, and she said that after she was done becoming a woman and maybe had kind of tried the sexual adventure, she said it was nothing compared to the satisfaction she got as a man. So that kind of told me that she was a really good man, but her heart really wanted to be a woman.
Helen, you want to respond?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a, and again, her case, what I start my lectures talking about usually is that once you know about one trans person, it means you know about one trans person's experience. There's so much variety, and Richards is definitely a case in point because she's been around for a while. Her transition was very difficult. Her self-acceptance has not always been awesome. But she's definitely in the case, too, where, I mean, I think about the Caitlyn Jenner issue and everybody says, oh, well, why does she have to be so pretty? And it's like, well, when trans women aren't pretty, then people take their womanness away from them. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation where I've seen people who are maybe more masculine looking or they have a little bit more masculine energy to them. And then, you know, then people are very dismissive of, oh, well, she's not really a woman. She doesn't feel like a woman or whatever that means, right? That other people are always kind of judging that. So for trans women in either direction, really, they get criticized and their gender dismissed. And I think that's one of the reasons why people tend to, when people are newly transitioning, tend to dress more, is because they want to avoid feeling like they're going to be laughed at.
Hmm. Thank you, Judy, very much for your call. We'll take more in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Transitioning from male to female, being married to man who transitioned to female and being able, not saying that it was easy, but still having a very committed relationship. Helen Boyd is our guest. Betty Crowell, her wife, is our guest. And our phone number, again, 800-486-8655. We'll take more phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Pat in Sussex, our next caller. Hey, Pat.
Hi.
Hi.
I appreciate all of you so much. My question is, you were wed to your husband. Now, did you get re-wed to your wife?
No, actually. This is a weird place for legal issues, but it's because of contract law, which is good as long as it's gone into at the time, et cetera, I'll leave this to the lawyers. Our marriage is still considered a heterosexual marriage, go figure.
Hmm.
We have joked about throwing another wedding, but then I think about all the planning, and we decided
we don't want to do it again.
You know, I don't, you know, if I want to wear a wedding dress, Halloween's coming up.
Right.
Yeah, and we had an awesome one.
About,
so,
could there be some legal questions down the road?
We're always in a place where we're not really sure. One of the reasons that I've always been outspoken about being for same-sex marriage, other than in my opinion it's the right thing to do, is that it would resolve any of our conflicts as well. So we're not sure all the time where we are legally. It's one of the, like I said, the tricky places. Generally speaking, the law will side with people like us who were heterosexual at the time that we got married. Other couples don't have the benefit of that, and people have certainly had their marriages annulled by courts and challenged in certain ways when one person is trans. So it's a tricky legal area that there's very little precedent for, but right now the precedent is for recognition of the marriage, no matter what the gender was at the time especially because obviously most of the states now are allowing same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, and it sounds like you're handling everything as it comes.
Yeah.
That's the best way to deal.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Pat, for the call. Kathy in Union Grove, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Actually, I just absolutely love your show and love this subject. I am in a same-sex relationship and, you know, don't have these issues, but I'm in, I just think you guys are awesome for, first of all, keeping the relationship together. I think that's amazing. I'm sure it wasn't easy at times. My question and observation is, through all of this, and it wasn't too long ago, Chaz Bono went through much heartache, went through much, you know, in his transition, and we haven't heard from him, or at least I haven't, in all the articles I've read or on social media or anything. And I just wondered if you've heard or what your take is on all that he went through and what he accomplished, being on Dancing with the Stars and everything. I mean, he put a lot out there to become who he is today. I just thought I'd ask your perspective on it.
Thanks, Kathy.
I don't particularly have any update on what he's doing these days, but he's certainly still speaking and doing things like that. I mean, if he's taking a break from media, I think we can all understand why that might be great. So to not be in the public eye for a little while. The difficulty was really, it was his mom. I mean, Cher had a very hard time getting her head around the transness. Again, like I said, I remind people that the closer you are to the person, sometimes the harder it is. But she did come around, too, and has become a great supporter. So I think he's just kind of being a little quiet right now. But otherwise, I don't know.
And I personally just thought it was awesome that he went on Dancing with the Stars. Just cool. That's a really cool, ballsy thing to do.
Yeah, that was a pretty... It was quite a thing. He just needed a few more dancing lessons.
Lord knows I'm not going on Dancing with the Stars, period.
Oh, I'd love to go on Dancing with the Stars. I can't, but I'd love to be able to do that. It would be so much fun. Thank you very much, Kathy, for your call. So tell me how tough it was, Helen, to go through all of this. How close did you come to saying, I just can't deal with all of this, it's too much? And is it really true that most people who are in your position do stay with the marriage now?
There's not enough studies for me to say one way or the other. There do seem to be more people staying than used to be. And I mean, when we were first kind of setting out, people were just like, that's it, you're doomed, right? There were also times historically that people were told they had to get divorced. So someone like my wife wouldn't have even been allowed to transition 30 years ago, because if she had gone into a doctor's office and said, you know I'm a woman, I want to do these things, and I think I'm going to want to date women once I've transitioned, they would have been like, yeah, no, right? Because
right.
Our culture is so homophobic. And so that wouldn't have been allowed at all. But even after that, maybe 15 years ago, people like us would have been encouraged to get divorced so that the trans woman could start anew and wouldn't feel like she was, reminded of the fact that she hurt her wife in her transition and things like that. So it's changed pretty dramatically, pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it'll be a surprise to any women listening that women seem to stay a lot more often, and that's no matter which way the person is transitioning. The female spouses do.
And is it just a sign, for a whole host of reasons we've explored before in this show, that this could only happen because we're becoming a little less homophobic?
I think it has a lot to do with it, yeah.
I agree. I think the idea behind the sort of acceptance of LGBT people has been that idea, once you get to know a gay man or a lesbian woman and you realize they're just another person who's going about their day, it doesn't seem like it takes much more of a leap to think that same thing about trans people. And then they meet a trans person and they go, oh, you're just a person who wants to grill out tonight. You're just a person. And I think that helps. And I think, we're definitely benefiting from the work done by LGBT people, but by no means do I want to discount the amazing work of trans people for like the last 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly brave, unbelievably brave people that, getting your picture taken for the cover of a magazine is wonderful, but it doesn't really compare to some of the things people 40 years ago went through.
Absolutely. Thank you both so much. It was a very interesting hour. Thank you for your honesty, and thank you for allowing us to meet you.
Thanks for having us.
Our guest, Helen Boyd. Helen has written two books about the experience of being married to a transgendered person. Her wife, Betty, they're both at Lawrence University. Helen is teaching gender studies there, and Betty is a photographer, designer, and filmmaker who works in new media and communications. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this very interesting show, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Great conversations ahead. Thanks for listening to this one. We're with you again tomorrow.